Welcome to episode 20. I'm over the moon excited to be talking today with the award-winning, best-selling thriller author Kevin Tomlinson. He has a long-standing career in film, television, radio, and podcasting. His popular podcast, The Word Slinger, is downloaded each week by thousands of listeners. I can only dream. He's known as the voice of indie publishing, a title he's proud to hold, and he has helped thousands of new authors grow their self-publishing careers. He is the head of marketing at Draft to Digital, a free book distribution platform. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks for having me. Oh, over the moon. That's pretty appropriate with the whole Mars probe thing happening right now.
Yeah, pretty exciting times.
Good times. Yeah. Good times to live in.
Yeah. Do you mind if we start talking about your writing first?
I don't mind at all. I'll talk about my writing all day long, so you're going to have to rein me in.
Well, I just finished The Girl in the Mayan Tomb, and I absolutely loved it. It's got everything I like in a story: strong, well-developed characters, a fast-paced plot. It had me on the edge of my seat to the last word. And in addition, I learned a bit about archaeology, and you left me with a hunger for more. So,
good.
People who like Indiana Jones will love this book, but I have a couple questions.
Sure.
In the book, you mentioned that most of the pyramids in the world are built in threes and form the pattern of the constellation Orion. Is that true?
Yeah, that is actually, I'm going to go ahead and say that that's true, because that's what I discovered in my research, was that there is a theory that they are all in the pattern of Orion's belt. Then that's disputed by some in the scientific community, so it's not going to be just a given fact, but there is this contingent of archaeologists and anthropologists who believe that there's a connection there. It most often gets ascribed to the folks who get called on to be on ancient aliens, that sort of show. but it's an intriguing enough fact from archaeology that I felt I had to include it.
Well, it really added to the story because it left a sense of mystery for me.
Yeah.
And you hinted the possibility of there being an earlier, as yet undocumented culture that created these sites. Does that theme run through all your books?
It's hinted. I hinted that in a couple of different books. That's an ongoing thing for me too. I'm intrigued by this idea that there may have been a culture that predates anything we know from history. There's certainly quite a bit of evidence of that. If you start looking around and start doing some research, there are people in this field who believe that there certainly was something before recorded history. There are a lot of connections between all the various cultures, for example, that can most easily be explained by them being connected at some point. There are mythologies, particularly gods, the stories of gods, where there's enough crossover that we start to think perhaps these cultures were once one united culture and something cataclysmic happened and split us all up. So, and we carried our mythologies with us.
and it works. I mean, it's not hard to find that theory working. So what came first for you, your love of archaeology or your love of writing?
That would definitely be my love of writing. I've been writing all my life. I started writing very early. I started writing stories. I tell people I wrote my first book at 5 years old. and it was, it was a handcrafted job. I wrote some on a big cheap notepad and told a story, and my family really enjoyed it. So there was some encouragement there. And I was given a tape recorder when I was a kid as a Christmas gift and a big sack of blank cassette tapes. I went to town. I just started dictating. I dictated stories in the vein of Encyclopedia Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that series? So I was a boy detective. I was solving mysteries as a young child. I wish I still had these tapes, I honestly do. There were some pretty funny scenarios. I was a young boy and the bathroom was the only quiet place in the house. And so you might occasionally hear the sound of a toilet flushing, which was in actuality an exploding car or something like that. So I had a lot of fun. So storytelling, that's been part of my DNA from very, very young.
Well, and you've had great success at it. Do you have any writing tips for us?
Yes, the biggest tip, and it's one that people groan over and maybe roll their eyes over, but it's write every day, every single day. And it's okay to take days off, but you should take days off the same way you might occasionally skip brushing your teeth in the morning, which means sparingly and with regret.
Absolutely.
What I found is I make writing part of a daily routine, just like brushing my teeth, just like taking a shower. It's how I start my day. For some people, they would prefer to write at night, so maybe it's how you finish your day. But find the time during the day where you're the most productive, where you not only have time to write. I mean, you're going to have to make time to write, but you not only find the time to actually do some writing, but you come back to that time every single day. That's sacred time that you honor by putting words on a page. So that's the very best. I mean, there are a ton of things I could tell you that I've told thousands of authors for the past few years about how to build and grow a career, about how to develop, your skills. But the number one tip and tool, the thing that'll carry you the furthest, is to write every single day.
And do you write now on paper, or are you still in the bathroom with your tape recorder?
No, so I don't do a ton of writing in the bathroom these days, but I've done some because I have my phone. I'll occasionally will write using my iPhone, the on-screen keyboard, actually. I'll write and edit with that. So, bathroom time can be a productive time. But I largely, these days, I write... I go back and forth. I have an iPad with a keyboard that I use when I travel primarily because it's convenient. It has built-in internet. It's small, good battery life. And I have my little MacBook that I carry with me locally, and then I have another computer at home that I write on. So I've got a range of tools, but I type. I'm very fast. I spent years as a copywriter. And so I had to learn how to write very quickly on just ridiculous deadlines. Had to be fast, had to be good, had to be accurate. If I could handpick a career for most authors, I'd say copywriting might be the best choice. It's not the most lucrative choice, but it is if you can become a proficient copywriter, not even an excellent copywriter, just a moderately good copywriter, it solves so many problems for you as a developing author. Working on a deadline is one. Being able to think quickly and put that on the page quickly, being able to self-edit, which took me forever to get around to mastering, but I'm slowly mastering. And you also pick up some skills that are useful in the marketing side. So it's a very useful career for a developing author to get into.
It sounds really useful.
Yeah.
I'm going to move on to Draft to Digital now. You call Draft to Digital the easy button for indie publishers. What do you mean by that?
So the idea, the very core principle of Draft to Digital is that we're out to make everything about publishing so simple and easy that the only stress in your life should be the writing. The only thing that you have to work hard for is to actually sit down and write. And we are it seems every week we're closer to that. We've already developed a whole raft of free tools and resources that authors can use to do everything from convert their manuscript to the EPUB and MOBI versions, which are used by EPUB is of course used by everybody. MOBI is used by Amazon's Kindle platform. And we can convert your book to a print ready, or actually we're just about to release D2D print. So we're actually going to be able to move your book right into print on demand from our service. So, we've got a whole bunch of these like handy tools, things that make life easy. Including one of the cool things we've done recently that I really dig on the print side is this cover converter. So if you paid to have someone design your ebook cover, you usually have that rectangular cover, we have a tool that will convert that into a print, full-size print cover. So you don't even have to pay extra money to get your cover expanded. So
that would save a lot of money.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's so very cool. We've got these cool layout tools, and they're sort of comparable to Vellum, if you've heard of Vellum.
I use it regularly.
Yeah, so we'll automatically convert that stuff for you for free. Everything we do is free. We the way we make money, because that's the inevitable next question is, if everything is free, how do you make money? The way we make money is we take a 10% cut of the royalty from sales through our platform. It ends up being around 15% total because of the sales channels take their cut as well. So you basically, it's a 15% cut total from your royalties when you sell a book through us. But you can use every single one of our tools, everything that we built, you can use without distributing through us, and you don't ever pay a dime. So it's a
great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We built this. We are authors. One of our founders is an author. I'm an author. We have Mark LaFave, formerly from Kobo. He's now our business development director, and he's an author. Half of our staff have been doing NaNoWriMo. The whole writing and publishing, that's in our DNA.
Oh, that's fantastic. Can you explain the Universal Book Link?
I can, and I will. Universal Book Link, UBLs. So what this is a single URL that you can use. It's an evergreen link that you can use to send readers to anywhere your book is sold online, and with a single click. And the first time that they click on it, it gives them a page that has all the different vendors, all the different sales channels where your book is available. And you create that. I'll explain that in a second. But the reader clicks on that, their storefront of choice. And then from that point on, they can actually set that as their preferred store. And every time they click a Universal Book Link from that day forward, it just takes them directly to that sales page.
Oh, I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great tool. If you prefer Amazon or Kobo, you can set those as your preferred store, and you'll just go straight to the book's sales page on those platforms. And it's a very easy system to use.
Yeah, and then the writer doesn't have to list, you know, like 10 places where you can find the book. They just have to list the one link.
That's right. And we made this even easier, by the way, because we do. So that was phase one. And phase two was to release our D2D author pages and what we call D2D book tabs. And the way these work, the book tabs are essentially, they're built like a sales page for your book. They have your cover, they have a blurb about the book, they have, you can actually have a carousel of books that are in the same series, they have a small little author bio at the bottom, and there's a button there that you can click that sends readers to the Universal Book Link, or if they've already selected a storefront, sends them straight to their store. So that's one way. We've kind of expanded on the Universal Book Link there. And then we built the D2D author pages to be your sort of, I'm a copywriter, so I come up with clever ways to say things, but it's your homepage away from homepage. So if you don't have a website, you could use your D2D author page as your site. It has your bio, your picture if you want. It has what we call a hero book, which is you select a book you want to promote, and it makes that the big giant image on the page, complete with a buy button and everything. And then, you know, we have carousels of all your books. Now, as of the past month, these are customizable. So you can actually rearrange your books, rearrange your series, create all new carousels. Maybe you have one carousel that's, you know, every free book that you have is in this one carousel, you know, lots of ways to promote your stuff. So all these tools, they work together. And we're constantly tinkering behind the scenes to make these something that the authors can really benefit from.
And are there ads on these pages?
Not a single ad. No,
that's so cool.
We don't try to monetize you as a brand. Our goal is to make it easy for you to sell as many books as possible with the hope that you'll use us to distribute those books, which means that we make more money. So it's the rising tide lifts all boats sort of theory. You know, we want to make sure that we're all in this together. We're all promoting each other as much as possible, helping each other as much as possible. And these tools are meant to make your life as an author much easier. We're the easy button. That's the idea at the heart of the business, and that's what we're sticking with.
And it's getting easier and easier. But I have a question. Okay, so as an author, why is it more advantageous for me to go through D2D than to go directly to, say, Kobo and Apple and Amazon?
There are a lot of reasons why it could be preferable. Let me start by saying that if you go direct, you stand to make more money. So if you're going direct to these different platforms, you're not paying us 15%, 10 or 15%, so you keep more of your royalty. So there is an advantage there, and we understand that. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is make everything so easy for you that you consider that 15% to be a sort of convenience fee. So we put all of your sales in one place with a very nice, very easy to read report, very attractive report, actually, mm-hmm. With charts and graphs, and you can sort the information however you like. And so that's one advantage. We make sure you get paid. That's another thing. So we only deal with vendors we've vetted to make sure that they, you know, they pay regularly, pay on time. And we don't keep your money any longer than necessary. As soon as we get money for you, it gets applied to your account, and on the very next pay period, you get paid. So there's no additional wait time. You know, some of these sales channels will have a 60 to 90 day payout. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to delay that any further. So as soon as there's money in an account earmarked for you, we make sure you're paid. We deal with all the technical problems on your behalf. So occasionally, if you upload to, say, Barnes & Noble, you could have a glitch and their customer service is impossible to reach. Yeah. So our customer service. I mean, it's kind of funny because we'll have people who used to be with us who decided to go direct, who reach out to us to see if they can help, if we can help them with problems they're having. And, you know, we would love to. And if we can, we'll try to. But the problem is you're not one of our authors now, so we don't have the same pull. We can't go on your behalf. But if you really think about it, like if you're going to each individual retailer, mm-hmm. you are one author with one really relatively small catalog of books. Even, you know, I have 40 books in my catalog. But even at 40 books, I'm not going to be pulling in enough to really be able to leverage Apple into doing anything, you know, or anyone else. Hmm. So, but Drafted Digital, we have 50,000 authors in our database at present, with I think it's around 150,000 active titles.
Wow,
that's a bit of pull.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
we can take care of some problems that you probably won't have the biceps to deal with on your own. And then we tend to get, if there's going to be any sort of promotion, we tend to hear about it before anyone else, just because of that, you know, that library of authors and books that we provide. So we're a big customer. For a big entity, they respect that, where you might not get the same level of attention and care if you were in on your own. So there are definite advantages to going direct. And in some cases, it's really a smarter move. For the majority of authors that I know in this industry, it's actually much smarter to pick an aggregator like us and go all in.
Because you offer a lot of services for very little cost,
right?
And
right.
Nothing up front.
No cost. We don't charge anything for the services,
right?
You know, and that's something we stick by. Like that's part of our charter, is to try. You know, we really try to never create. Occasionally, there are things that come up where we have no choice but to pass the overhead of something on to the author. It hasn't happened often. But as we make new partnerships and things like that, like, for example, audiobooks, like we have Findaway Voices is a partner. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't own them. We don't have control over their model. And so we can't, you know, there's no way to offer free narration, for example. So you have to pay for a narrator no matter what. But what we did do was we partnered with them, and you don't have to pay the $49 fee that they charge per book. So There's a fee for, and the word has completely escaped me, but when you're doing auditions, you know, when you're getting, they're going out and finding people who send you their auditions, the narrators, right? And when you're listening to all that, there's a fee for that, $49 fee per book. Well, you don't have to pay that. It's like an admin fee. So, you know, we can't make the service itself free, but we can, you know, buffer it a little. Yeah. So there, that's where some of the advantages come in for having us as a kind of advocate for you as an indie author.
So you're a huge advocate on more than one plane. So you're in ebooks and now print and audio.
Yes. We don't own the audio, but we are, you know, we have a fantastic relationship with Findaway, and Findaway is the largest audiobook distributor on the planet.
Really?
Yeah. They'll get you into everywhere. Not only do they get you into Audible and Apple's bookstore, used to be iBooks, they'll get you into those, but also several hundred other channels worldwide. So your chance of discoverability in audio goes way up if you do not do the exclusivity deal at ACX and instead come pay out of pocket for a narrator, but get into the world's largest distribution network. So yeah. Makes things a little easier to consider.
Well, and I know I've been looking at it. And the other thing I really like about it is you have some control over the price, whereas I deal with ACX and I have no control over the price. And quite honestly, they charge too much for my little books.
They do. And that was one of the things when we first set up this partnership, you know, the big headache with Amazon is Audible controls that price, and there's really nothing anybody's going to be able to do about that. No. But Amazon does have a history of price matching. So because you can control your price on literally every other channel, when you distribute through Findaway, you can set your price to zero if you want. Because you have that control, there's a better chance that Amazon will match that price on their platform, which ends up working to your advantage anyway. Because now they show that they want $35 for this book, but they price matched it to the, you know, $10 that you're charging everywhere else.
And it's huge. And you can also run your own sales and whatnot that you can't through ACX.
Right.
But moving on to distribution, how big a thing is it that we can now sell through Draft Digital to Walmart?
I think it's pretty big. I don't think it's the most exciting distribution channel we've added in the past couple of years. And the reason for that is, first of all, we get there through Kobo like everyone else. It's Kobo's deal with Walmart that has books in Walmart. But the reason I don't think it's quite as exciting as some of the other channels we've added, specifically like the library channels we've recently added, is because Walmart hasn't yet figured out how they're handling this incoming flood of authors and books. Like they're only just starting to kind of tinker with discoverability on their end. So, I mean, as an example, if you, maybe this has changed recently, I don't know, but when for the first month or so that our books were in there, if you went and searched specifically for my name, mm-hmm. or specifically for one of my titles, you would not find it, even though it was there.
That's because they're,
yeah. Because one of the things that people don't realize about Amazon, Amazon is a search engine, not just a sales platform. So they've invested quite a bit in solving the problem of, you know, discoverability, and Walmart hasn't yet gotten to that point. Now they've been improving, and I've been noticing on Facebook, for example, ads for books on Walmart.com will occasionally be served as I'm tooling around on Facebook. Mm. So there's clearly something else. And that's, I think, inside information tells me that that's Kobo handling that. But Walmart's not stupid.
No, and they have a lot of money when they decide to what they want to do. Yeah.
So I think that the issues will be solved, but the reason I'm not quite as excited about Walmart as other platforms right now is because they're not quite there yet. But what is exciting is to have that available on the, we'll just say it's one of the two biggest sales platforms on the planet. and to have your books available there is quite exciting. And the fact that some books will actually get the sort of honor of being on physical shelves in some of the Walmarts because of the they have the little hanger system.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
So that's very cool. You know, Diane Capri, a thriller author, a good friend of mine, one of her books was available through Walmart on those hangers. And it's kind of neat. You know, the customer can buy their Kobo e-reader at Walmart and pick up a couple of books while they're there. And they carry these little hangers up to the register and they get scanned and added to their device.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that's very cool. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening there. I'm excited for Kobo. I think Kobo's just, they're blowing it up. They are also good friends of ours, friends of business, I like to say, FOB. and they're kind of rocking it. You know, Rakuten bought them a couple of years ago, and it's been a flume ride for them ever since. But we're benefiting from that because of our relationship with Kobo. And that gives us the ability to do things like, you know, get our books into Walmart, which is pretty fantastic.
It is. And I love things being shaken up. But talking about shaking up, Mark Dawson recently said there's been more change in the last 6 weeks in publishing than in the last 6 years. Are you feeling that?
I'm definitely seeing the signs of tremors. You know, there are all kinds of things happening. Amazon, for example, has they've gone to their sort of localization, you know, making sure that storefronts in, say, Australia, or that customers in Australia are going to Amazon's Australia store rather than Amazon.com. That they're geo-locking books. So there's some strange things happening that I think, you know, there are just signs of more to come.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, overall, what I don't want is for authors to start panicking and doing things out of a knee-jerk reaction to what the industry's doing. First of all, no one, not even us, can predict what the industry is going to do.
No you know, control over it.
We got no control over it. And we're a pretty big player, and so we know things. You know, stuff comes up, and we know things are happening. But there's nothing I've noticed on the horizon that I think is worth panicking over and doing things, you know, in preparation for. Other than, I think it is wise for authors to be distributed wide. But I've been saying that for 5 years. So I, you know, there's nothing new under the sun there. You should look to get your books as wide as possible, as early as possible. Only because we don't want any one entity to have enough control over the industry that it could shut it down.
Absolutely,
know?
Yeah.
So, which is what we currently have with KDP Select and the Unlimited program. But yeah, Mark's absolutely right. He and I have talked about this at length at various conferences. Not only Mark and I, but you know, David Goggren and Joanna Penn and a whole bunch of other influencers. You know, we've had conversations about what's happening and what's to come. And I think that just like most shifts, tectonic shifts in our industry, there will be more opportunities than there will be dangers for us to navigate around. I think that it's going to shake things up and make things uncomfortable. But every time that happens, there are these vast opportunities that we can pursue. And I don't know what those are going to look like yet. But I'm pretty excited, you know, to see him come. So,
well, I love your positive attitude. I was going to ask you if you had any advice for indie authors about marketing, but I think that kind of says it. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I think marketing is such it can be a boogeyman to some folks. And I think that we get ourselves into a rut and we get overwhelmed. But I think that the key to marketing is A, to find the type of marketing that works best for you, works with your brand, works with your temperament, works with your skills, which means, you know, experimenting and testing things out and not trying to do all things. You know, spend more time, you know, testing things to figure out what's comfortable for you and what works, gets you the best result, and less time trying to figure out how to integrate new ideas into what you're doing. But the other thing that I think is key for indie authors in particular is content marketing. And, you know, this is nothing new at all. but we're starting to see influencers like Joanna Penn, for example, talking about how they're using content to drive more readers to their work. So content is this the discoverability tool. I like to think of content marketing as being the most primal indie author marketing there is. It is indie author marketing.
I because love it. Primal.
We are, it is. We are content creators at our heart and in our soul, right? That's what we are. Mm-hmm. So why not leverage that strength in a form of marketing that is that has no gatekeepers, that is entirely under our control, mm-hmm. that, you know, syncs perfectly with the work that we're doing that we love. So, you know, I'm good with podcasts. I like to create podcasts. I'm going to do that. I'm going to create blog posts because I like to write anyway. So, and I use the research that I do becomes content. You know, I'm already looking at it. I'm already reading things, watching things. So I can share what I'm finding in a format that encourages people to check out my work. And I think that's the key to marketing for indie authors in particular, is to find out how the people who enjoy your stories, find out how they're spending their time outside of your work. What are they interested in that's related to you? Go out and find them and reach them where they are and point them back to you. Don't spam them with buy my book, but instead say, hey, I've got this article on the arrangement of pyramids and the connection of cultures, right?
Yeah.
So that stuff's fascinating to people, and it gets them intrigued about the ideas. And if I then say, you know, I got a whole novel based on this idea, then they're interested in the novel.
Much smoother, yeah.
That's my recommendation to indie authors, at least, to embrace content marketing as the indie author marketing tool of choice.
love it. How about advice for podcasters?
For podcasters, the key to a successful podcast is systems. It's taken me forever to really develop the kind of systems that make it a quick and easy thing for me to produce a show. I was for a time. I tried paying people. I tried all kinds of things, but it just none of that really worked for me because the more people you integrate into a process, the more beholden you become to that process. Because I got to manage those people, right?
Yeah.
So what I advise people to do is if you've got the money and you don't mind managing people, sure, go ahead and pay for people to produce on your behalf. But I would work on finding a way to break everything down into easy systems that you can repeat on demand each week or each day or however frequently you're doing your show. And you know, develop those systems, refine those systems. Don't be afraid to change things. Don't be afraid to change your format until you've got something that really works for you. My show has gone through 4 or 5 different format changes in the 5 years that I've been running, most of those within the past 2 years.
Wow.
And I think I've benefited from that. I got burned out for a time, and I thought, well, you know, I don't want to lose the show, so how do I get past the burnout mm-hmm. and still be able to produce a show and like what I'm doing? And I found a way that works for me. And, you know, you can too. If you're interested in podcasting, first of all, I would put some serious thought into what your goal is for the show. Because my show doesn't actually match up with the goal I originally had for it, which was to find more readers, because it's aimed at indie authors. But what it has done is give me a vehicle for connecting with the community in a way that I never would have thought I could do, to become something of an influencer myself. People know me and they ask me questions. So I have that. It helps out Drafted Digital that I have the show. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were a lot of things that came out of producing Wordslinger podcast that I didn't necessarily prepare for, but were a benefit anyway. And now I'm going to create a show that's aimed at finding readers because that's a goal for my career. So
know what you're... a separate podcast entirely.
Yeah.
Oh, that is cool.
I'm working on it.
That is really cool. I'm going to look forward to hearing that. You've been so generous with your time, and you're so creative. Is there one thing that is more your passion, or is it always come back to the writing?
You know what it actually comes back to? It comes back to the story. I will tell a story in whatever format is most inspiring for me. And it goes all the way back to that, you know, I told you I wrote it 5 years old. I had a tape recorder, you know. If you think about it, that was all preparation for exactly what I do now. I write stories and I record myself. And, I think you find the tool. So, because if you think about history, there are storytellers throughout history. We started with it was all oral history. It was all, people. You had bards wandering around playing lyres and lutes and telling stories through song. And then you had people who went from town to town and just stood on a stump and told a story to the crowd in exchange for food and shelter. You know, so we had all that, and then we had people who, once we had the technology, pen and paper comes along, and then the printing press comes along, and then, you know, typewriters and computers and et cetera. And so it really doesn't matter what the instrument is. You have to find a way to express what your real passion. My real passion is telling a story. And I do that, the older I get, the more I realize I do it in a number of ways. But I write books because I love that format. Mm-hmm. But if that format went away tomorrow, I'd have to find another way to tell these same stories. You know, I worked in film and TV, so I told stories with a camera for a while. I worked as a copywriter, so I was telling the story of a client and their product through that copy that ended up on everything from laptops to, small screens, television, that sort of thing, to magazines and the like. I have the podcast, which is another form of storytelling. I tell stories about the people I encounter and how, what, and learning what they know and sharing that with other people. It's all really the same thing. So,
it's all story.
I think I meandered a little bit from your question, but I
I think you nailed it, and it's inspiring.
Yeah, well, that's part of my credo. I actually have a. Let me see if I can remember it well enough to rattle it off. But I have a mission statement, and it is that my mission is to inform and inspire, educate and entertain. That's the guiding principle of both my personal life and my career. And the podcast, the books, the blog posts, the magazine articles, the television shows, everything I've ever done, everything I'm doing now, and everything I ever will do, it feeds at least one of the tiers of that four-post mission statement.
Oh, perfect. where can people find you?
The easiest way to find me is kevintumlinson.com. That's that's my author website. And I link to the podcast from there, so you can find Wordslinger Podcast there. And I also now link, it was stupid, I never even thought of it forever, but now I have a link to Draft a Digital that is in the top bar. But you can also go and visit draft2digital.com, and that's draft2digital.com. Although if you get it wrong, you type TO, we have that covered too.
I noticed I did it wrong.
Yeah, well, people do, and so we want to make sure that we make it easy, will come back easy. We make it easy for people who find us. So, but if you go to kevintumlinson.com, that's going to cover you all around. And I realize that Tumlinson is not the easiest name to spell either, but give it a shot. See what you find. If you Google Kevin Tumlinson, by the way, you will not miss me. I'm all over the search engines. I'm all over social media, so you will find me.
And I'll put all of this in the show notes. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Kevin.
Anytime. You reach out anytime. I'm here for, I make myself accessible to indie authors almost 24/7. So, one way or another, you can reach out to me with questions or, looking for help, and I'll do everything I can to help you. That's kind of just part of who I am.
That's awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening. Now it's your turn. What do you think about today's topic? You can leave comments for me on my website or email me directly. I'd love to hear from you. If you want to know more about me, check out my podcast website, bloodsweatandwords.com. You can also sign up for my weekly newsletter, which contains writing tips and information about upcoming podcasts. Now, if you really, really enjoyed the show, consider becoming one of my patrons through Patreon and help me pay my podcasting bills. And that's a wrap. I leave you with these wise words spoken by Robin Williams in the Dead Poets Society. We don't read or write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race, and the human race is filled with passion. And medicine, law, business, engineering, these are noble pursuits and necessary to sustain life. But poetry, beauty, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for. To quote from Whitman, "O me, O life, of the questions of these recurring, of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish, what good amid these, O me, O life?" Answer, that you are here, that life exists, and identity, and the powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse. That the powerful play goes on, and you may contribute a verse. What will your verse be? See you between the lines.